Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188, for all your gold and silver coin needs. We will have Wendy Wilson from the Apothecary Herb Shop will be joining me shortly, and you can find her website at thepowerherbs.com. The name of her business is Apothecary Herb Shop. And she will be with us shortly. First, we will have the market report, which is gold is down $3.80 today to $1,385.60 an ounce. Silver is up 6 cents to $21.95. Platinum is down $25 to $1,457 per ounce. Palladium is down $24. To $738 per ounce. Dow Jones is up 180 points to 15,175. NASDAQ is up 44 points to 3,445. New York Stock Exchange is up 117 points to 9,307. U.S. Dollar Index is down 0.25. to 80.72. Crude oil is up 81 cents a barrel to $96.69 a barrel. I believe we talked about this yesterday. Everything was up yesterday, if I recall correctly. Everything, including the dollar. And today it's fixed. It doesn't prove anything one way or the other. It's like we're trying to read the numbers on a slot machine. You can gather a certain statistical inference from reading those numbers, but what do they actually prove? I don't know that they prove anything other than the wheels on the slot machine are capable of rotating. Wendy, how are you doing today? I don't hear Wendy.
I'm here, Al. How you doing?
You caught Melody's. She does that once in a while. She turns on her mute button. And then
I'm terrible. You know, I got to hold it in my hand because, you know, if I don't, it'll just hit against something and it'll, all of a sudden I'm off.
It just seems so strange. A woman who hits the mute button, there's something about stereotypical women that you wouldn't think women would ever use the mute button. But here we have two that use them a little bit too much. Yeah. I'm joking, of course, but in any case, what do you know about black seed?
Flaxseed, did you say?
No, I said black seed.
Oh, black seed from India.
Yeah, it's Indian from the Middle East. And in fact, there is a quote describing black seed that goes back 1,500 years anyway.
Right.
Where it says the remedy for everything but death.
Yeah, I know.
And that was ascribed to the prophet Muhammad. Now, I don't mean that gives it any additional credibility, but this is an interesting product that I've just heard about lately. And I was wondering if you know whether it's strong, weak, hyped, claims to be great for everything. What do you think?
Well, you know, I shy away from the panacea type of, marketing.
Okay.
Basically, but because there's really not one thing that'll help us out when we're in a health issue. It's usually a combination of things. So, it's pretty average. I mean, I think it's good for digestive ailments as well. I've heard it's good for like dysentery and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people like it because they say it helps boost immunity. But I think there's other herbs that are indigenous to the United States that do an even better job of boosting immunity, and garlic's one of them.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Well, that's something about black seed, and something that I just heard about just lately, and I've actually bought a couple of bottles, and I'm trying it out, but I'm curious. And when I first got it.
It's kind of exotic, and I think people are drawn to that. Are you drawn to the exotic, Al?
Well, I was in the days of my youth.
I'm kidding.
I'm less inclined to go with the exotics today than I did then, because I know they can lead you into, you get a lot of trouble with exotics. But today, if it's anything exotic in my life, it's perhaps seed coming from India. In any case, it's around for a couple thousand years. Go ahead.
I got a question for you. Do you know what the ACOs are?
ACO. No, I don't know what that means.
It's a byproduct of the Affordable Care Act, also termed Obamacare. But ACO stands for the Accountable Care Organization. And these folks are going to be assigned to everybody's health care. In other words, right now they're divvying up all of Americans. They're starting with the Medicare folks first, but they're divvying them up per region. And the ACOs, those that are in charge, the ACOs are accountable to government for your health care.
Then what they're doing is they're appointing these ACOs. You're not going to be accountable for your health care. They're going to be accountable for your health care. Is that the implication?
That is the implication, that it certainly is.
What do you suppose will happen if someone tries to be personally responsible for their own health care? Will that be tolerated, welcomed? Will it be resisted? And you'll be told, hey, you can't do that. It doesn't conform to the party line or whatever. What's going to happen for those?
Well, sure. I mean, it's totally ludicrous sounding, but you know, there's all kinds of nutty things going on where now they can inoculate your kids at school without telling you in certain states. I certainly wouldn't say it won't go there, but back in 2009 when Congress supposedly voted on the Affordable Care Act, it was only 2,700 pages. Now the Affordable Care Act.
You just hit the mute button or something, Wendy, because I can't hear you. I'm not sure what's happened here, but I've lost Wendy, or you folks have lost me. I appear to still be on the program.
I'm here.
I
can
can't
you hear me?
Hear. All right. Yeah, I can now. Good. You see, I thought I was joking about that mute button thing, but I mean, this is strange.
I didn't touch mine. My mute button's not been touched.
Okay.
So I don't know what happened, a little glitch, but where did you lose me?
I'm not sure exactly. We were, I don't know. I went into a state of shock when I couldn't, when I lost my guest, I went into a state of shock and I just kind of mental blackout and I have no idea.
Okay, well, I'll just repeat it that, in 2009 they voted on Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, it was 2,700 pages. Now it is 20,000 pages. Yeah. And if you stacked it up, it's 7 feet, 3 inches tall. That's how many pages are in the Affordable Care Act right now.
Somebody must really, really care about us, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's a three-step process, and this is how they intend to wipe out private health is, first, they're dividing the country up right now. That's what they're doing, into regions to assign to ACOs, and this will be pushing the private practices to close. Under the strain of the new regulation, they won't have the resources to comply, and more people are not going to the doctor anyway, and they can't afford insurance. So this is going to push the private healthcare practices out. Once that's done, then the private medical competition's removed. The government-run healthcare is going to be the only game in town. And so then Obama's going to move to remove or withhold financial incentives to the hospitals. And the hospitals, if they want to survive, they got to actually merge. And we're seeing some of this now. They're merging with larger hospital authorities to survive, or they'll close. The other option is to bribe government officials to stay open. And number three, the government then will withhold money. They'll fail to reimburse the hospitals, which will have to cut staff and also care. And, you know, you'll get worse than third world care at that point. And what will happen is there'll be a total collapse and implosion of the system, which the government will move in to save you from that national crisis, which they created. And then they'll own all the hospitals nationwide.
Well, how soon do you expect this to? I am sure this has already started.
Well,
how long do you suppose it'll take it to implement?
Well, according to Dr. Lee Heeb, who is an orthopedic surgeon formerly with the U.S. Marine Corps and has been in private practice for 20 years, this is underway right now, and probably will be completed within 5 years. Yeah.
So what happens to people that are selling the kind of vitamins or herbs like you are right now that are providing for people who want to take care of their own health care? What's the probability that your business is going to be able to survive these new governmental regulations? On the face of it, you might sit back and say, if the free market prevails, there'll be more and more people that are going to want. They're going to say, the government can't get me anything. I've got to do some business with Wendy in order to get what I need to try to stay healthy. Will the government allow that? Or do you think the government is going to absolutely restrict it, so the only place you can get your health care is from a government-owned hospital or medical facility?
Well, they've been trying for over a decade to shut out or get rid of the vitamin supplements. I mean, this latest round with the FDA trying to change the good manufacturing guidelines to go in through the back door to implement the Food Harmonization Code, also known as Codex Alimentarius, and that was shut down. Fortunately, enough people in enough places, the right places, got that derailed for the moment, but doesn't mean those people won't be back on the bandwagon. So, you know, it's just, I tell people, don't wait until the last minute. Don't be last minute Rita, you know. And, you know, because I think it was a lady by the name of, what was her name? I can't think of her name. It was Rita something that she said, you know, the last minute is when most things get done.
Yeah.
You know? But don't be a last minute Rita, and get things taken care of now, whether it's, you know, getting your food and your backup currency and your ammunition. I say don't forget your, you know, immune system ammunition and your health ammunition with your, like you say, your supplements and vitamins, because you're going to need it.
I understand.
You're definitely going to need it. So I don't know, Al. I don't know if they're going to try to shut down vitamins and supplements altogether. I know the European Union's got a problem with it, and a lot of countries can't import certain things. So it's just a wait and see, but I don't tell people to wait to act. I say, you know, get your stuff taken care of now. Now, a lot of your supplements, like your herbal products that we make, have a 10-year shelf life, so that's going to give you a hedge against a lot of the products that only have a 2-year shelf life.
I agree.
So, yeah. So a lot of question marks. But, you know, according to what some of the doctors are saying, they're bailing. If they can afford to retire, they are. They're closing their practices early rather than have to deal with all the nonsense, even the electronic requirements that the Affordable Care Act is requiring doctors. They're pretty much wanting them to go paperless, which I think is – there's a good and a bad way of looking at that. That's a double-edged sword, if you know what I mean.
I understand exactly. If you go paperless – they can access the records with minimum effort. I mean, paperless, you can put a whole hospital's records on one CD perhaps, depending on the size of the hospital. But if you go, that's paperless, meaning digital. But if you may continue to use paper records, it creates a huge burden for the government. They can't sort things with computers if they're looking for particular words or codes or dollar sums or whatever on paper documents. Somebody's got to go through and read every one of them, and the labor burden is enormous. They want digital. It makes it easier to monitor. You know, you probably heard me talk about being sued by the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now,
yes.
The point about that, let me see if I can find this. I'm looking at a section of the United States Attorney's Manual. Here we go. Title 21, Section 321. This is what we used in our own. This is what came up in our own case. States in pertinent part. And I'm reading, this is a government document from the United States Attorney's Manual. And Title 21, United States Code, Section 321, definitions. States in pertinent part for the purpose of this chapter, G1. The term drug means articles intended in the use, diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease in man or other animals. And the point we picked up on that, I drafted a freedom of religion defense. My religion says on the sixth day God created mankind in his image, gave man dominion over the animals. You can't declare me to be an animal without violating my freedom of religion. And here we have definition of drugs at the federal level, also at most state levels, is that they apply to man or other animals, which means, doesn't say man or animals, says man or other animals. It means they deem man to be an animal in violation of our Christian and Jewish faiths. Now, the point is that in the particular case I was involved in, drugs were a pertinent for the central issue. I was involved in the manufacture and distribution of colloidal silver, and we ran him off with his freedom of religion defense. And I've thought for some time that this same defense, I think it can work on Obamacare.
Because there
is no medicine in this country without drugs or medical devices, which also uses the definition.
The drugs never cured a thing anyway, so I don't even know why that's in there. But the problem is, you know, what you just did is you used the sword of the spirit to defeat the enemy, Al.
That's exactly right.
And those words are powerful, and they'll do it every time. I've seen it time and time again. And those folks who plug that kind of stuff into their legal defense always win. And that is all the glory goes to God for that.
I agree.
And I know we're running out of time, but next time you have to ask me about the new bug bite, how they're working bug cells into some new things that are coming down the pike. So,
if you want to stick around for another segment,
would you like to stick around for another 20 minutes? Sure.
We'll bring you back after the end of it, and we can talk about, we'll get into that topic on bug bites or whatever at that point in time. Before we go, we've got, 2 minutes before the break, minute and a half, something like that. If you post articles, here's an article from the Trenches World Report. If you post articles to your Facebook wall that warn others about the dangers of vaccines, or tweet links to the latest studies tying vaccines to autism through Twitter, the vaccine pushers of the world could soon know about it in real time. According to new reports, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation-backed scientists in both the United States and Great Britain have jointly developed a computerized global monitoring system capable of tracking all social media activity around the globe that defies mainstream vaccine dogma and reporting it directly to authorities. Now, is this cause for alarm? Or is this cause for people to stand up and begin to communicate? They're going to try to shut us down, stop people like yourself from communicating information about vaccines. Is it time for everybody to rise up and make it their business to communicate and throw it in their face and say, we're not afraid of you?
I agree with you all wholeheartedly. I think, you know, the time to have some standing, to have some righteousness is right about now.
Yeah, I agree. We are at a critical moment in time, and it's the sort of thing, which way things are going to go will be determined by what all of us do in the next couple of years, maybe months. You know, it's not just a question of preparing, it's also a question of standing up at the right time and not shooting, not bombing, but just standing up for things like your right to have access to herbs, to vitamins, even perhaps one day to gold and silver. We're going to take a break. This is Financial Survival. I'm Alfred Addis here with Wendy Wilson from the Apothecary Herb Shop. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Wendy Wilson from the Apothecary Herb Shop, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. We've got a special from Discount Gold and Silver, an MS-61 $20 Liberty. This is a 1 ounce gold eagle. Includes shipping, $1,685 per coin. The Mint State 61 $20 Liberty is also known as the Double Eagle. It was first minted in 1849 during the California Gold Rush. These coins are known to produce extra leverage when demand is high and can increase at a faster pace than their modern-day counterpart, the American Eagle Gold Bullion Coin. Also included is a 1 ounce silver American Eagle, as well as shipping costs for all, for $1,685, regular price $1,775. You're saving $90 if you order today. MS-61, $20 Liberty, 1 ounce Silver Eagle, $1,685. Give Carl a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. All right, you wanted to talk to us about something about a bug that was biting us.
Well, Wendy, you know, summertime. Yeah, summertime, we worry about those things, you know, poison ivy, rashes, bug bites. But, hey, they figured out a new way to give us a bug bite, Al. The FDA has just approved Protein Science Corporation, or PSC for short, to be able to manufacture a new experimental vaccine to test on the public. Well, you may be saying, well, aren't all vaccines experimental? Well, yes, they are. But this is the first vaccine to be made with genetically modified proteins from three different flu strains and also GM proteins from insect cells.
Sounds really appetizing. I'd want a double dose of that.
Okay. It's called the FluBlock. It's FluBlock. And we're told the vaccine is trivalent, which means it has three different flu strains. But Protein Science Corporation has extracted some cells from insects to harvest the baculovirus for the purpose of speeding up the production of their serum. So this is a new vaccine technology that they're playing with. No longer are they messing around with growing cultures on eggs, Al. It's all about bugs and maybe tobacco leaves to help them speed production. Also included in this wonderful flu vaccine is the cells of the fall army worm, which is a caterpillar. It's been genetically altered to produce huge amounts of hemagglutinin, and the hemagglutinin is important because it's a flu protein that will allow all the other viruses to penetrate deeply into your body.
Well, I don't know what to say other than these people are losing their minds, and I can understand. They're going to promote this, and they're going to say, look, we've got a new flu vaccine that has three, we will protect you against three different strains of flu with one shot. And that way, we don't know which strain of flu or bird flu is coming this next winter. Isn't that true?
Well, according to the manufacturers, which is a Protein Science Corporation, they say that FluBlock is really a great deal. It is 45% effective against not just two or three of the flu strains. They say it's 45% effective against all flu strains. So this is the rush for the universal vaccine that is really hot right now. And also Novartis has come out with something similar. It's called Flaceflax vaccine. It's made on dog kidney cells. And it's kind of like the flu block where it bypasses the traditional means of making vaccines with the chicken eggs. So this new technology empowers these drug manufacturers to manufacture any serum for any pandemic at the drop of Big Brother's hat. And so swift production and rapid distribution is the name of the game now in the vaccine industry.
Yeah, I understand.
They say that Novartis says that they're Flaceflax vaccine is 83.3% effective, but the side effects are horrendous for both of these. We're talking seizures, bleeding, aside from the, flu symptoms, we're talking respiratory arrest, your lips, your tongue, your throat swelling up, you can't breathe, it's terrible. So I think a couple of people even died on one of the trials. So I say watch it, don't roll up your sleeves around anybody, but, watch yourselves.
Then we've got a proposed flu virus or flu vaccine that is perhaps 45% effective, meaning that if we give that vaccine to 100 people, mm-hmm. 45 of them won't get the flu. 55 presumably will or at least could.
Mm-hmm.
How many out of the 45 do you have any idea they're going to suffer an adverse reaction? Do you have any numbers on that?
Oh, no, but I know some of the more severe side effects were muscle pain and tenderness like you had fibromyalgia, okay? It could cause you an immune system compromise that could be permanent. They don't know yet. And the other thing was that the fluid around your brain, your brain has a sac. That fluid, if you get this vaccine, could leak down your sinuses and into your nose, and you have leaky brain. I'm not kidding.
Well, I don't know. This is, here's another article along a similar direction. Well, the one we're just reading from, Synthetic Biology, and they're talking about a public crowdfunding campaign has been launched by starter biotech company Genome Compiler to create bioengineered glow-in-the-dark plants that will be given away to donors. All right, you give them some money and they're going to give you a new man-made plant that glows in the dark. Now, that's pretty interesting all by itself. Plants need light to grow, and they are creating plants that glow in the dark and apparently generate their own light. I don't suppose we can use these to raise crops in the dark, but, you know, I'm half joking, but it's bizarre. This will be the first, here's the point, though. This will be the first organism created by synthetic biology techniques to ever be released into the wild, and most astonishingly, it will bypass any regulatory approval procedures in the process. Some people put a plant together that glows in the dark, or they're working on it, and they intend to hand them out. You give us some money, and we're going to give you a free glow-in-the-dark plant. Well, what is the glow-in-the-dark plant going to do? It's going to make little seeds, I'm going to guess, and it's going to make pollen. It's one way or another, it's going to impact the other plants that are in the world. Well, and is this a good thing?
It's sort of like that genetically modified salmon, which we're told that is sterile if it escaped the fish hatch. You know what? But Canada did their own independent study recently, and they found that to be all lies. That not only does the genetically modified salmon mate with other salmon and other species, and is not sterile, they're more aggressive and stronger, so they'll probably displace the organic salmon eventually if they ever got out into the wild. So, but. But, you know, the genetically modified vaccines for flu pandemics and stuff is not the only GM medicine they've been making, Al. Your insulin is GM now. Your human growth hormones, your infertility drugs, your human blood serum and antibodies that they use at the hospitals, hemophiliac drugs, and, of course, your vaccine. So they're moving in this at a rapid pace. They're replacing everything organic with this.
And when they do replace, and what's the object of replacing that which is organic?
Well, they say it's more economical, you know, it's more...
It's patentable.
Yeah.
There's the point to it. If I can patent a particular drug, if I make a drug,
right,
and I patent it because it's a new creation, then I'm the guy who makes the profit. On the other hand, if I'm just distributing organic substances that might work as well or better, I can't claim any special profit rights. I am caught in the free market. I have to compete with everyone else who's selling herbs and vitamins, and I have to hold prices down to free market prices. If I can get that patent on that new drug, however, I can buy my third corporate jet, if you catch my drift.
Well, hey, be careful with your genetically engineered human blood, okay? It is made from mice cells that are fused together to create the antibodies, and that doesn't fit well with me.
I understand.
I bought
a tomato, a bunch of tomatoes, one of these little vines that had, there might have been 15 or 20 little cherry tomatoes on it, and this goes back into the late 1980s. And I saw them in the grocery store, and they were so red. They looked like they were as red as Christmas tree ornaments. And there wasn't a speck on them that was a little bit green or off color or whatever. You know, you get tomatoes, and part there's a little green on it. Got red in places, orange in places. These were just stunningly perfect. I bought a bundle of these things, and I brought them home. And I stuck them in the – and while I was unloading the groceries, I stuck this bunch of – tomatoes up on a shelf in a cabinet, and I closed the cabinet door and forgot them, and I didn't stumble onto them again. It was like a month later,
and I stumbled on.
They were still looking good, right? They hadn't deteriorated the least bit.
Oh my God.
People are concerned. They're concerned about. They want products that have that aren't going to deteriorate. Why do they deteriorate? Because little microorganisms eat them. It's because they are digestible. That's what makes food rot. If you can find a food that doesn't rot, guess what? It's not food.
No kidding. You understand? No kidding. And I've talked to Dr. Carley. She says all this DNA technology, this genetically, it's really altering our DNA. So you want to go from a God's creation to an animal, this is it.
And it's may only, and there's another question. When they start altering our, if it's true they're altering our DNA,
mm-hmm.
what are the results and how are we being altered? And what I'm getting to is this. Is it possible that we become effectively addicted to their GM genetically modified products? Is it conceivable that before it's done, I can't eat organic food anymore? The only food I can eat is that which is patented, and I got to pay through the nose to get it from somebody else, and if I don't get it, I'm going to die. It may be too fantastic an idea to be correct, but it doesn't. It's not too fantastic to be plausible. You ever heard of such a thing before?
Yeah, I mean, I think really to explain how the DNA corruption happens, you should have Dr. Rebecca Carley on. She's very good at explaining that. But I think what you just brought up is a valid point because Teddy Roosevelt once said, you know, a man who's never gone to school may steal a freight car, but if he has a university education, he may steal the whole railroad.
I understand.
So
he's exactly right.
You know, so we're dealing with some very scientifically minded, gifted, bright people as far as university training goes. So, whether they would intend to, you know, lock us into a perpetual cycle where we're addicted just like we would be to cigarettes,
yep.
I would ask Dr. Carley that question.
Well, it's one of those things, if they haven't thought of it yet, it's inevitable that they will. I guarantee whatever corporation has the patent is looking for a way to make more money. And if there's a way of vamping that patent up a little bit, we'll plug in another, you know, another hydrogen molecule or another carbon molecule or whatever, and next thing you know, people can't live without it. I guarantee they'll do it if they can find a way. I've got one last one. We've got about 3 minutes left. Here's one. This is from PopSci. It says, we're making less effective drugs now than 40 years ago. A new study examines the effectiveness of new drugs compared with placebo in drug trials from 1966 to 2010. The new drugs aren't looking so hot. Apparently, the good old days really did shine brighter, at least for drug development in decades past. Clinical trials found that drugs were hugely effective compared to a placebo. In other words, they'd test someone. They'd say, here we got a new drug, and we're going to give some of the people the new drug, and we're going to give other people a placebo. And nobody's going to know whether they're getting a good one or the real drug or just the placebo, which is just inert substance. And we can tell from the difference how many people catch the disease who've taken the placebo, how many people catch the disease who've taken the drug. From that difference, we can tell whether the drug is effective or not. And what this article says is back in 1966, there was a huge difference. They could say, oh, yeah, this drug is really kicking butt compared to a placebo. But today, the difference between the placebos and the new drugs is minimal. Right?
Yeah, right. I mean, and, you know, recently, as you probably already know, a lot of fraud has come out in a lot of those medical journals because the testing that was done, there's a lot of pressure by those who conduct those scientific trials, you know, because they want the pharmaceutical money. They want them to come back and do more trials. So what they do is they suppress the information that's true, and they even sometimes make up numbers showing that the drug is effective. So it's bad. I mean, I think it's like 85% of the studies now are fraud, they were saying. So, yeah, it's bad. I mean, and this is what your doctors read. And so now doctors are really skeptical. They're starting to think, you know, well, can I trust this information? Is it really a peer review I can trust? So people are just going to have to do their own homework, you know?
Huh. I understand. It really does become a survival of the fittest environment. And if you want to survive, you've got to be fit to find your own source of vitamins, herbs, whatever it is, antibiotics, whatever you personally think is right. But you may not have access to those in the future. Wendy, we've got about 30 seconds left. Why don't you give folks contact information?
Oh, great. Always fun to talk to you, Al. Yes, thepowerherbs.com is our official website, thepowerherbs.com. Of course, you can call us toll-free if you want a brand-new catalog. We have our new one in at 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. 3663, and don't forget to sign up for the American Survival Newsletter. Al, you write for that. Melanie writes for it. Dr. Carly, and get free health information. You won't get anywhere else.
Thank you, Wendy. Always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you next Thursday.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good day. Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here at Financial Survival. I'll be back in about 3 minutes. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Let me see if I can find today's special. I can. MS-61, $20 Liberty, plus 1 ounce Silver Eagle. Includes shipping, $1,685. That's a savings of $90. Again, MS-61, $20 Liberty, gold coin. Just a shade under 1 ounce. A 1 ounce Silver Eagle includes shipping, $1,685. Give Discount Gold and Silver a call at 1-800-375-4188. Here's an interesting story. This is one of those things that's just almost too fantastic. This is from Freedom Outpost. The headline is DHS, Department of Homeland Security, tells Border Patrol they have ammo shortage. Okay, the DHS, and here's their letter, enforcement personnel, due to budget concerns and ammunition availability, we will not be getting issued any proficiency ammunition for next quarter. In addition to these reductions, we are also being limited to qualification ammo only. What this means is that you will not receive the normal 150 rounds for practice, and we will not have any extra ammunition for combat course following the next normal qualifications. Department of Homeland Security is telling the Border Patrol, gosh, we don't have any bullets for you. All right, they got some, but not what they were hoping for. And this is fascinating because the Department of Homeland Security apparently and is reported to have acquired nearly 264 million rounds of ammunition back near the end of November of last year. What did they do with all those rounds? How is it that they don't have any to protect the border? They're hanging on to their ammunition for what reason? They are hoarding ammunition for what reason? What does Homeland Security have to do with ammunition right now that is more important than using it to protect our borders from an invasion by illegal aliens? Does anyone have an answer to that? I don't. At least I don't have a rational answer. I don't have an answer that is consistent with the idea of liberty and freedom in this country. I don't have an answer. Why do they need to keep their bullets and they can't provide them for the one job where bullets might be necessary, and that's protecting the border from invasion by illegal aliens? It is another one of those stories that is simply bizarre. You see it, you hear it, and you wonder, what the heck is going on? Here's another one, a little bit strange. CEO refused NASA NSA wiretaps on customers, now sits in prison. As you know, we have a big to-do, a scandal involving government surveillance. The government is using private companies involved with the Internet to monitor and record the metadata on our telephones and our Internet communications, and there is a big hullabaloo about it. But in the midst of this current scandal, it's brought an old yet very relevant story to the spotlight. The chief executive officer of Quest, Quest, Joseph P. Nacio, was asked by the National Security Agency to wiretap his customers back in 2001. Okay? So we're talking 13 years ago. He's asked to spy on his customers. He refused. All Quest government contracts were canceled, and they brought up insider trading charges against the CEO. He now sits in federal prison. What a coincidence. The guy refuses to do business with to spy on his customers on behalf of the federal government, and ultimately he loses his government contracts. And then they throw him in jail. Pretty interesting, isn't it? It's evidence that the government has been trying to spy on us for over a decade. That's for sure. And it may go much further than that. But this is evidence that takes us back at least to 2001. And they are so determined to spy on us that they are willing ultimately to jail those CEOs who refuse to spy on us. Do you suppose that the people who are running Verizon, for example, Corporation Verizon, who are prominently featured as one of the sources of the data that's being accumulated and sent to the government, do you suppose that when the government or whoever approached Verizon and said, we want this data, that someone didn't remind the CEO and maybe the board of directors of Verizon, take a look at this guy Nacio. He was the CEO of Quest back in 2001, and now he sits in federal prison. I wonder whether or not they brought that up in order to motivate the CEO, the board of directors, the president of the corporation, whoever at Verizon to say, you know, it wouldn't be such a bad thing. We could give you the metadata on our phone, on our customers' phone calls. Think they did that? Do you think they used that intimidation? Here's a question from LRC, the LRC blog, Lou Rockwell. And the question, Jacob G. Hornberger pointedly asks, who were the patriots and who were the traitors in Nazi Germany? During the 1940s, when the World War II was raging, I guarantee you that anyone who resisted the Nazis were defined by the Nazis to be traitors. But in retrospect, we go back, and that's true anytime you have a government, the people try to resist that government in extreme circumstances, the government say they are traitors. They're traitors. But in retrospect, and in addition to calling these dissidents traitors, the government will try to define itself as being the patriots.
Everyone who supports the government is a patriot. And those who resist the government are traitors. And that's the way government always frames things. It's just the nature of mankind and government and life. It's we're the good guys and they're the bad guys. We all like to frame things that way. And then when the government does it, they talk about we are the patriots and they are the traitors. But the question is, who were the real patriots and who were the real traitors in Nazi Germany? And the implication, of course, the implied answer is that the real traitors were the Nazis. They were the ones who led Germany astray. Now, I know there's people who argue that, look, the Nazis were a bunch of great guys and the rest of that. I'm using this. I'm not making comments about the Nazis per se. I'm using this as a metaphor in order to raise the same question again today. Just as we could ask who were the patriots and who were the traitors in Nazi Germany, and we could in retrospect sit back and say, you know, the Nazis were the traitors. They claimed to be the patriots, but they were the traitors. And the people, the relatively few people who stood up and resisted them and were declared to be traitors, they were the ones who were the real patriots. So we can ask the same kind of question today. Huh? When it comes to our own political involvement with government, is government the real patriot? Are they the ones that are fighting for this country? Because if they were, why is it that we don't have enough ammunition for Border Patrol? We got a couple hundred million rounds sitting in Department of Homeland Security warehouses someplace, but we don't have any for Border Patrol. How is it that we have spent our money and our time and some of our lives invading Afghanistan and invading Iraq for no good reasons? How is it that's happened while we can't protect our border from an invasion by illegal aliens? Can we sit back and deduce from all this who is the real patriot, who is fighting to hold this country together, and who is fighting to take it apart? Is your government really fighting to hold this country together, to make it stronger, or is it fighting to ship our jobs to third world nations and expend our military resources in Iraq and Afghanistan and perhaps Syria and or Iran before this is all over? Who are the real patriots and who are the real traitors? You know, it's one of those things where you got two sides that are pointing at each other, and both sides are saying, oh, they're the traitors. And they're saying, oh, no, you're the traitors. Well, it's a question we're going to have to think about, and we should all think about. Who do you suppose the real traitors are? Because sometimes it's not easy to know, but there is a question. There is doubt, and it's one of those questions that folks out of, you know, who do you think? And I'm not telling you. I'm not even going to try to tell you which answer is correct. But I am going to tell you that there is a question. And I'm saying that you should consider which answer do you think is correct. Who are the patriots, the government or the dissidents? Who are the traitors, the government or the dissidents? Who's who on these things? What else have we got? Here's something. Oh, this is a good one. This is interesting. Home Depot co-founder. Let's throw Ed Snowden a party. That's the headline. This is from Lou Rockwell blog. Home Depot co-founder Ken Langone told Neil Cavuto, the National Security Agency leaker Edward Snowden, should be celebrated. I'd throw a party for him. I'd congratulate him. I'd say thank you for helping to protect America's privacy rights. That's what I'd do for him. I think we ought to be grateful that we have kids like that in America. And Ed Snowden, of course, is the guy who has made the leaks concerning government surveillance by means of Verizon and other major corporations. He's the ones that leaked this information and started the current scandal. And here's the Home Depot co-founder, Ken Langone, and he says, I'd celebrate him. I'd throw him a party. And he says,
I'd thank you for helping protect America's privacy rights. And I think Ed Snowden would agree with that. He said, well, thank you very much. And he says, yes, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to protect America's privacy rights. But when we talk about our privacy rights, we touched on this yesterday. What are we fundamentally talking about? We're not just talking about the idea that the government can't peer in the doors, the windows, or listen to your telephone conversations. It goes deeper than that. What Mr. Snowden has done in revealing the government spying is he has helped to protect a fundamental presumption on which this nation was based, and that you are innocent until proven guilty. Huh? What Mr. Snowden is helping to protect is the presumption of innocence. He's not just protecting our right to privacy. It goes deeper. He is helping to preserve the presumption of innocence. It is the presumption of innocence that lays at the foundation of the idea that the government can't spy on us unless they have at least some sort of probable cause to believe that we are guilty of something. And the government's sitting back. We don't need any probable cause. We don't need any. Well, you don't need a warrant from the Justice Department. We'll spy on everybody in order to allegedly look for a handful of terrorists. But while we're at it, we may look for some dissidents too. We may identify people who are critical of government, people who want to cause a readjustment in the political system where the government loses power and loses income rather than gains more power and more tax dollars and more money borrowed. We can look for them. While we're supposedly looking for terrorists, we can look for dissidents. And not just people that stand up and muckrakers who get up on a soapbox like I do and mouth off on radio or perhaps in print or whatever. There is a growing body of people who distrust the government, openly distrust the government. It's about 30% of the population, according to some reports. These are people that I think the government wants to identify and wants to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on. Because they are concerned that the amount of government resistance is growing, and they want to be able to stop it, identify it, identify leaders, see who is. For example, if there's a leader in a particular movement, he's the guy, he's the go-to guy. They can identify him by just studying the metadata that they collect on the phone calls. Who is always being called? Somebody's always calling John Smith, and he gets calls from Bill and Bob and Jane and Phyllis, and everybody's calling. Everybody is calling Bob Smith. What's that tell us? It implies that Bob Smith is a leader. It implies that if we can pull him out of the loop, we can strike a blow against the dissidents that may ultimately threaten this government. And it's part of the reason why the metadata, the collection of metadata, is not a modest intrusion into our privacy. It's not a modest violation of the presumption of innocence. It is a dangerous act committed against the American people by the government of the United States. I'm Alfred Adisk, and I am out of time for today. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. Roger Sales will join me from Argentina. I hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Wendy, Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.